Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist, and I'm so excited that you joined us today. It is Sunday, October, I should have looked at the calendar, 24th. So if you're listening now at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, you're listening live. And again, I'm so happy you decided to tune into the show today. This is a show for parents and professionals who are concerned about children who are late talkers. And if you have a question for me today, I'd love to take a stab at answering that. And the call-in number is 1-718-766-4332. So if you have something you'd like to talk about, please, this would be a perfect time to call. Until then, I want to start by thanking all the ladies who joined me in Cincinnati, Ohio this past Thursday for a super conference. I had a blast and just a really fun day and lots of neat women who love babies as much as I do and who spend their days like I do working with children in early intervention programs. And I want to also remind everyone that I'll be in Columbus, Ohio this Thursday, and there's still time to register for that conference. And if you'd like more information about that, as always, you can check my website at teachmetotalk.com and just click on the category entitled Conferences there on the yellow category bar. And you can get all the information you want. And then my upcoming dates, I'll be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on Wednesday, November 17th, followed by a quick trip the very next day on Thursday, November 18th to Edison, New Jersey. And then the first week in December in New Orleans on Thursday, December 2nd, and then Baton Rouge on Friday, December 1st. And then I'm so excited, this isn't even on the website yet, but to announce that I'll be in St. Louis on Friday, oh, I believe it's December 9th, the 9th. So please join me for those conferences, and I'd love to have you there. Now let's move on to what we normally do, which is taking questions from moms who are concerned about their own children. And I will just start with a follow-up that was on last week's show. We had a mom who sent in a comment to the website about her twins who weren't talking. And if you listened to last week's show, we spent a lot of time talking about those twins and the different things that mom could do at home. She was mostly concerned because one of the twins seemed to be responding less favorably when she tried to work with him. So Kate and I gave her some ideas for that. And this is what her response was, and I was so excited to get it. It says, "Dear Laura, I was so moved when I got your email. The fact that you read my email and devoted almost an entire show to it really meant a lot to me. I am sincerely grateful for your and Kate's advice and suggestions. I also love your DVDs and like your articles. I'm watching them repeatedly to learn and implement the techniques. Hopefully, with time, they will become like second nature to me. I also like your suggestion to set my pace according to the twin who is slower. I will endeavor to do the same and also to concentrate a lot more on building and improving their receptive language skills. I'll let you know our progress. Thank you again for your website, podcast, and DVDs and all the direction they provide." So what a nice follow-up. I love it when we actually hear back from the moms that we take the time to talk about, read their comments, and give advice. And sometimes I think, oh, my goodness, I hope they listen to the show. But even if those moms don't, chances are if one mom has sent in a concern or a question or a comment about something, there are other moms who need that same advice. So if you are in that situation and are working with twins and need some ideas for that, check out last week's show. It's show number 88, and you can find that again on my website at teachmetotalk.com. Okay, let's move on to a new question from a mom named Harmony. Excuse me. She says, "My son Jacob recently was diagnosed with speech delays. He turned 3 in under a week. We took him to see an ENT who told us that he has about 10% hearing loss in both ears. They said it's not enough to cause a speech delay or to get him hearing aids. However, while he was there, the ENT did a preliminary screening for autism, and she said that my son has autism. She said a mild form of it, but he still has it. Reading this webpage makes me want to cry. I see my son in so many of these symptoms or concerns. And what Harmony is talking about is an article on my website at teachmetotalk.com that says, are you concerned your child might have autism? So, again, there's a list there, and she was reading through that, and she apparently recognized so many of those characteristics in her little boy, and so she's responding to that article. And she says, Jacob, however, does not have a problem with eye contact or smiling when smiled at. But at almost 3 years old, he has just started talking and may have a vocabulary of 200 words. He does not really put sentences together like he should. And if we mess up any, and she's capitalized that, and capitalized the whole word, so I guess she means it's pretty extreme. She says, if we mess up any part of his daily routine, Lord have mercy, we are in for it. Everything has to be done at the same time in the same order. Everything. And again, she's got some exclamation points after that for effect. She goes on to say that he's very aggressive toward other children, especially male children. He's not been officially diagnosed as autistic, and my husband feels like it may be Asperger's. The more I read about autism, the more, though, I'm convinced that he's autistic. In about a week, Jacob is due to start special ed preschool. I'm very worried that he's not going to adjust well. Any advice on how to make this transition easier for him? Because of his hearing loss, my husband and I are working on sign language with him, and he's learning it. And on some days he says new words, and some days he says no words at all. Some days he signs only, and some days he talks in signs. Some words he won't even say, he just signs them. He prefers to play alone, and he does not like it when anyone disturbs his play. When he runs, it looks like he's constantly on the verge of falling down. He runs straight, but he turns his eyes to the side. I'm really hoping that the school either diagnose him or tell us how to better help him if he's not autistic. I'm praying that he's not, and I really don't want to hear that diagnosis. We were told by Jacob's speech therapist to push for a hearing aid. Do you think that it could just be his hearing problem that's making him seem autistic? Any advice on this subject would be greatly appreciated. I feel like I'm drowning. Thank you. And then she wrote a comment maybe a day or so later, and she says, I'm leaving a lot out. It would take days to tell you everything. My main concerns right now are the transition to school. Any advice on this would be greatly appreciated, please. Thank you so much for taking the time to read this. And I do want to start by apologizing to this mom that I've not gotten to answer her on the website with the speaking schedule and still trying to maintain a caseload and all those other personal demands that being a busy wife and mom seem to keep piling on. I haven't gotten to follow up with questions on the website, so this is the main reason that I wanted to talk about her question today. The transition to school, I think, is hard for lots of moms. First of all, it sounds like he has not been in daycare or any other child care setting, so I know this can be scary for moms, especially when you have never been away from your child and you think, he can't talk. How will he tell me if anything bad happens at school? How will he let his needs be known? Because so many moms really anticipate and interpret what their children need, and they're so scared when our little friends like this, when they're not talking, that other adults won't be as responsive and won't, again, know how to meet those needs. But I will say, because she said it's a special education preschool, that he will not be the only child that's ever had any of the issues that she's described for those teachers. He won't be their first test case. It won't be the first time they've had a child who's language delayed, and it certainly won't be the first time that they've had a child that may or may not be on the spectrum or even demonstrating those characteristics. So because it's a special education preschool, I would just feel really reassured that he's going to be with teachers who are educated and, again, who have experience in dealing with children that are exhibiting the characteristics that he's exhibiting. And I would just really encourage you to pursue that, because that educational placement will give him an opportunity to learn things with adults other than you, and he'll get a whole different set of circumstances. And most of the time in programs like that, he's also going to get the therapy that he needs. So he'll be getting speech therapy at school. And I would also probably guess that he'll be getting occupational therapy. And if that's something that they don't suggest for him, I would highly encourage you to pursue that as his mom, because it sounds like he's demonstrating lots of sensory processing differences, that running and looking to the side, That's certainly a red flag that there's some visual sensory processing, again, issues going on, some challenges. Other things that you mentioned about him wanting the same routine every day and getting upset if anyone disturbs the order in his play, again, those are all red flags that do indicate that he could be on the autism spectrum, but more importantly than that, that he's having some sensory processing challenges. And so regardless of whether he gets the diagnosis or doesn't get the diagnosis, you're going to want to follow up with an OT so that they can help you come up with strategies that will make living with him easier, strategies that will improve his play skills so that they begin to mature and he's able to accept, have a bigger frustration tolerance, so that he can take turns when he's playing and so he can not react as strongly or aggressively with other children, especially during those play situations. So, again, I think an OT is going to be really, really important as a part of his overall treatment plan. If OT is not offered at school, I think it's so important that I would follow up and pursue that privately if I were you, even if it meant filing your insurance or if you had to come up with the cash to pay for those visits on your own. I think it would certainly be a service worth pursuing for a little boy who sounds like he's having lots of those sensory processing challenges. So that would be something that I would really follow up on as well. Talk with his teachers about what might make the transition easier for him. You know, it's going to be a new experience, so you can anticipate that it may not go perfectly at the beginning, and that's okay. And again, they've dealt with children like Jacob before. He will not be the most delayed kid they've ever seen because you said that he is talking and he is walking. And certainly in a special education preschool, we get nonverbal children who are three. We get children with mobility issues who are over three. So again, he will not be the most disordered or delayed kid they've ever seen. So try to let that reassure you a little bit and then let him get started and have the teachers then tell you their ideas for what might make the transition easier for him. You know, you can talk about school in a positive way, and these are, again, are things that we do with typically developing children just to prepare them for the day. You know, we're going to a new school. Mommy's going to leave you there. I will come back and get you. At the end of the day, you're going to make new friends and have fun. And because of his language delay, he might not understand all of those words, but just your reassuring manner, just you telling him that it's going to be fun, that he's going to have a good time and get to learn lots of new things. Again, he may not be able to process all of that immediately, but just your general, your lack of anxiety. If you could do anything that you could to not demonstrate that you're so worried about this or that you are fearful that things may not go well, if you could just act really happy about it and really excited about it and present it as a new fun activity, I think that would be the best way to go for that. I also wanted to address that so many parents, when they hear a child might be on the autism spectrum, they start looking at lots of information and really getting concerned about what kind of autism is it, and they'll start to look at Asperger's as maybe a less severe kind, and then they almost start to kind of shift their focus to, if he's on the spectrum, I hope it's Asperger's. And for parents listening for this, know that most children, or nearly all children with Asperger's, don't have difficulty getting language going. They are talking and are not what we would consider to be nonverbal children at two or late talkers at two. They pretty much hit those milestones for acquiring vocabulary on time. And lots of children with Asperger's get diagnosed later because language has not been the thing that they're struggling with. So, again, when I see a two-year-old and a mom says to me, do you think he has Asperger's and he's not talking at all, I always try to talk with them and say that the lack of expressive language really eliminates that as a diagnosis, because children with Asperger's usually talk. Now, their language isn't always socially appropriate. Usually they're just talking about what they want to talk about, or they may be more echolalic at two, meaning they can quote long, long, long scripts from television shows or conversations that they've heard. But again, when we see a little guy who's been late to acquire words, Asperger's is not a diagnosis that we would typically think about for him. Sometimes people see the whole organizational piece and liking routine as only specific to children with Asperger's, and that's not really accurate information. Really, that whole preference for routine and organization can be seen across the spectrum for children with autism. So that in and of itself does not mean that Asperger's is necessarily the subtype that their child may go on to be diagnosed with. I think it's really interesting that the ENT did the preliminary screening for autism. She obviously saw enough there to make her concerned about that, and I guess in her profession, because many parents or pediatricians kind of start with an audiological evaluation as a way to rule out an etiology or a reason for a speech-language delay, that an ENT visit is what you would do at the beginning, or an audiological exam and or evaluation. And again, I think that ENT needs to be applauded for that, for doing the screening. But would an ENT be the person that would officially diagnose autism? Not in my opinion. I think that you would really want him to see optimally a team of professionals, with a speech-language pathologist who's skilled in diagnosing autism spectrum disorder. She would hopefully have a psychologist on that team as well, again, with specific experience in diagnosing autism. An occupational therapist would certainly be a functioning member of a team like that. So I would encourage you to pursue an assessment like that. I believe that you said that he was scheduled for that, for an assessment. And so that's another thing that I would highly encourage you to do. Certainly the school will be giving you some information about what they think is going on diagnostically with him. And I would listen to them, because they are going to be with Jacob all day or a portion of the day for most of the week. You didn't say if it's an all-day program or half day. But certainly I would listen to what they have to say, because sometimes when we send children for a one-shot assessment visit with a team to diagnose autism, and the child gets there and has the best day of his life, and the team says, no, you don't have to worry about autism, and then the parents kind of go, phew, ooh, we dodged that bullet. And then years later, they may be revisiting that diagnosis. So I would place lots of importance on what the people who see him routinely have to say about him, because, again, they're not going to see him just for one day. They'll be evaluating him over time. So I would really listen for that. As far as the hearing aid goes, I tend to lean more toward what the ENT said. With a really, really mild hearing loss of, I think you said, 10% in both ears, I would have been more comfortable if you were saying what the exact decibel level of loss was, but I can only guess that it's not significantly above what would be considered to be normal hearing. And so, again, the ENT didn't feel that it would be appropriate for him to have hearing aids. Again, without seeing Jacob, I would just have to follow the advice of the ENT. But there must be enough concern that your speech pathologist would want to push for that. And again, I would really make a second opinion audiological evaluation appointment. And it does sound like the ENT is who tested the hearing. I would go talk to a pediatric audiologist, someone who evaluates hearing all of the time, that's the only thing they do. And certainly ENTs might have a person, an audiologist, on staff in their office, but sometimes ENTs just do the little screening test for hearing, and moms might believe that that's a full assessment when, in essence, it's really not. So if he did not have a full audiological evaluation, I would certainly pursue that with a pediatric audiologist, and it's very important that you get someone who specializes in pediatrics. just like it would be for Jacob to see a pediatrician right now at 3 rather than seeing a general practitioner doctor for any medical issues. And a pediatric audiologist is going to be very skilled in helping children participate, and we all know that toddlers aren't the easiest little creatures to test, whether we're talking about hearing or anything else, so you want someone who does that full-time, and it's their main job, and also someone who can really help interpret those results for you and help you make some good treatment decisions based on Jacob's really specific profile with being a late talker and then with having additional social communication concerns. So follow up with your pediatric audiologist as well. Your pediatrician could probably refer you to one, or you might want to call the ENT's office back for an additional referral with that. And let's see if I've answered all your questions, Harmony. Let me run through this. Oh, I did want to point out that, again, and I touched on this briefly, but just looking at a list on the Internet, even on a site like mine where I only focus on speech-language milestones and strategies for moms and dads for children birth to 3, just looking at a checklist alone is not going to really objectively tell you whether Jacob qualifies for the diagnosis of autism or not. So just because you're seeing those characteristics, certainly you don't want to ignore any gut feelings that you have or ignore these things that other professionals have pointed out to you, but get that full assessment so that you'll know once and for all if he does meet the diagnostic criteria. And I've already included my little caveat with that, in that sometimes parents don't get a truly accurate picture at 3, and then the child goes on to have or continue to struggle with language and with social issues and with sensory issues and maybe early academic problems, and then on down the road they might revisit the whole issue of whether he's on the spectrum or not. But don't get so wrapped up in right now looking at that checklist and just letting everything hinge on whether he's on the spectrum or not, because regardless of what that evaluation results in, a diagnosis or no diagnosis, he still is struggling with speech. He's still displaying these sensory processing issues. So you're going to want to treat those things, again, with or without that diagnosis of autism. But thank you so much for writing into the website. I hope that you have a chance to listen to the show. If you want to send me back a follow-up comment on the website, I would love to receive that from you. And better yet, if you want to call the show next Sunday night at 6 o'clock Eastern Time, I would love to talk with you about it so that I can answer any more specific questions that you might have. Okay, let's move on. This is another letter that I received. It's kind of long, from a mom, and she's asked me not to share her name, so I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to just read through this. Lots of information, lots of things to talk about here with this particular mom with her concerns with her little girl. She says, "Dear Laura, I know you've been away, but I just wanted to make sure that you received my email," and I think she had tried to email me several weeks ago, and again, with my really increased pace of my schedule, I have not been able to follow up with private emails or with comments on the website as frequently or as quickly as I would like, so I'm glad that this mom was persistent in emailing me back. She says, I'm sorry for being a pest, but I'm getting a little desperate and in panic mode on what to do to help my daughter while early intervention starts. Please see below. Thanks so much for your time." And then she says, "Oh, I forgot to mention that she can hear fine and she's never used a pacifier, never liked it." And so then the mom goes on to kind of copy and paste her first email to me. She says, "Dear Laura, I decided to send you an email instead of posting this comment on the website. I hope you don't mind. We recently bought your DVD, Teach Me to Talk, and both my husband and I find it good. However, we are feeling a little bit frustrated because it doesn't really address our issues. Our daughter is just not there yet. She doesn't really talk. So I'm seeking your advice." Let's kind of stop right there. Parents have written this to me before, and let me just address it by saying that the premise for Teach Me to Talk really is to give some pretty general strategies And those are the very same strategies that I start with children on my caseload. And they're the very first things that I teach parents to do with children. It starts by being really, really playful. And there are some super examples of videotaped sessions with children that I was working with at the time, children who were delayed, who were really on my caseload, with ways to play with them, ways to help them interact, ways to make them want to be with me, because when children want to be with you instead of doing their own things, whether it be roaming around the room or just kind of focusing or hyper-focusing on a toy and not wanting to let you play, those kinds of things really don't lend themselves to children being with you or socially connected enough with you to learn how to talk. So first, children have to really want to be with you and have that social connection before they're really ready to understand words, and certainly before they're able to use words. And so what playfulness does, and by helping a parent learn how to really, really make things fun and make things exciting and really entice and want to their child want to engage with them again and play with them rather than just taking a cool toy and hoarding it and playing alone in the corner, that playfulness approach, which is at the very beginning, really kind of sets the stage for everything. And so again, it doesn't matter if a child is talking or not talking or kind of where they fall on the developmental continuum, playfulness is the very, very, very first thing that I really talk to parents about, that I try to model for parents when we're in sessions, so that they can see that really heightened affect with me acting like I am just having the time of my life with a toy really does help children, and that would be most children, even those with social skill deficits, want to pay attention and, again, want to be with you. And so establishing that social connection is important for any kid, a kid who's, it sounds like what her child might be, who is not talking yet, but she feels like for one reason or another just isn't ready to talk. Again, it really doesn't matter. Playfulness is that's my first strategy, my first line of defense with any kid, regardless of what's going on, is looking at how they can interact with me during play. And so that's why I do think that Teach Me to Talk is relevant, even if you have a kid who's completely silent, because so many times implementing that super playful approach is, again, a really first step in helping children establish that foundational social connection. So that certainly is appropriate for everyone. The next strategy on Teach Me to Talk is using sign language, and I think that is my number one strategy for any child that I'm going to see on my caseload, but with the caveat being that a child would have to be ready to sign, and certainly with the information that I'm going to read about her coming up that her mom has provided, I think that she sounds like a child who is ready to sign. She's not a child who's has difficulty maintaining that social connection, according to what her mom said about her later on. So signs would be something that I would revisit. I think what the mom has meant with watching Teach Me to Talk and how she was concerned about that is that there are children who are talking, even at the phrase level, on there, and she just feels like, okay, my daughter's not there. These techniques may not be appropriate. And they may not be appropriate yet for your little girl, but again, the preliminary techniques of playfulness, sign language, and modeling probably are. So don't feel like that you have watched that in vain or spent money on that when you didn't need to yet, that she wasn't ready, because those three strategies are what we would use for every child with communication delays. So I wanted to just address that. And then she goes on to give me the specific information. She says, we have a 27-month-old daughter. She's very smart, but she's not talking. She said mama early on at about 6 months. And she managed to say, and she's written this Italian word, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it because I know that I'll butcher it because I do not speak Italian. And she said she managed to say this word before one. She may have a total word count of 20 to 30 now, but she doesn't use them on a daily basis. She understands everything, even things that I wouldn't think she would. She understands both English and Spanish, but she understands English more. My husband has been taking care of her since he works from home. She just started Montessori school 3 half-days a week, and I think this may be helping. She tries to say my now, and I know she didn't learn that from us. Yeah, chances are she learned that from school with some little friends, because mine is an important concept. We want children to verbally defend their possessions when they're with other two-year-olds. So I think it's super that she learned that word. And again, mom has acknowledged that she did not learn that from her and dad. She says she likes to make animal noises, and she likes to grab the phone and pretend to talk, and she says babbles. She even says, uh-huh. And then she goes on to say, I don't know if she's getting confused with the languages. I speak to her in Spanish sometimes. I read to her in Italian and French. We recently went on vacation to France, where she heard a lot of French. She also says some words in Spanish. She's been evaluated and will start in the early intervention program in my state, but since federal law gives them 45 days, they're waiting to the last day for the meeting, which has me very aggravated, because then they're going to use these other 21 days to find a speech therapist, and in the meantime, all this time is passing, and all they care about are their stupid deadlines, and they're waiting for the very last minute instead of acting now. Oh, that mom is so frustrated, and I understand that frustration. I would feel that way if I were a parent as well. And some states really do a great job of trying to make sure that those timelines are met, but again, that they're on the early end of those. I'm wondering if they have a shortage of speech-language pathologists, so they are, again, looking maybe during this time, or trying to scrounge somebody up to serve this great family. You know, that might be it too. Many, many, many states have shortages of speech pathologists. That's why in some states you'll have a developmental interventionist like Kate work with the kid. In some states they call those special instructors. Basically, they're just preschool teachers. And again, if they have been doing this for very long, they certainly have worked with children with speech-language delays, because that's the number one reason that we see children in early intervention. Again, so maybe the state program's having a hard time with enough speech people to go around. So that could be it too. But again, I don't know, and I tend to be on the side of the parents who would want that speech therapist there the day after the evaluation, which is certainly how I would feel too. So I understand your frustration with that. She says they will allow me to join the program because of the large gap between her comprehension and verbalizing. So I'm glad about that, because I do think she needs a little push. And I would agree with that as well. Let's just stop right there. She's got another long paragraph, but let's just go ahead and talk about what she's already said. She's already doing a great thing in that she has her in Montessori school, and typically those preschools follow the same identical program, whether you have that preschool in Louisville, Kentucky, or in New York City, or out in L.A., or in Chicago. Montessori programs, again, are based on a specific curriculum and a specific philosophy for teaching children. And so if that school is like all the Montessori programs I know, she is in a great place for her to learn. So number one, let me congratulate you on getting her in a super preschool program. That certainly is so, so, so important if you're looking at preschool as an option for your child. Now, when I've said that, let me just say the reason that the Montessori school is nationally recognized as a great preschool program is because they look at a child's developmental skills, and more importantly, all of their teachers are highly educated. So you can't work in a preschool program and not have participated in or gone through their pretty specific requirements about how they teach children, how they interact with children, what their disciplinary methods are, what their, again, their total philosophy is. So putting a child in a Montessori program would be very, very, very different than putting a child just in a regular daycare environment, because, again, the teachers are highly trained and highly educated. So I just want to make that point, that so many times a parent will take one little piece of information they hear from someone like the pediatrician, or maybe even on a show like this, and say, well, she said that he'll start to talk if I put him in daycare. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if your child is going to go to preschool, a Montessori program overall would be a really good fit, because, again, those teachers are educated and certainly know how to work with children according to developmental guidelines. And so, again, it's not just the same as putting your child in any daycare program. And, again, they have a specific curriculum. They have things that they're addressing. And more importantly than the things they're working on, it's how they're working on it. They are so child-friendly and child-directed so that in the Montessori program that I see a little boy in, they have little workstations and everyone, and again, work meaning play because we know that's how toddlers work. And so there's so many interesting things for the children to do in the room, and they Montessori programs believe that children learn by doing. And so the children are constantly engaged in little activities. And they use lots of singing and lots of other developmentally appropriate ways, again, to teach the children and have them participate in the classroom routine. So I can't say enough great things about Montessori programs. So, again, if you're wanting your child in a program that has a great reputation overall, that would be a super program to pursue. So, but I did just want to say that not all preschools or certainly all daycares are created the same, so you want to make sure your child is in a quality program. The other thing that I would want to say is, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, all the research tells us that children who are exposed to more than one language are going to reach their expressive milestones later. So this little girl is hearing English and Spanish, and I believe Mom says that she is reading in Italian and French. Those are four different languages, and while that is a language-rich environment for her, it may just be more than her little system can sort out. So she's not exactly sure when to use a word or what word goes with what. She may be, again, it says that she's following directions. She understands English more. So if I were this mom and if I were seeing this little girl on my caseload, I would recommend that they save those other languages for later and really stick to one primary language right now until she's talking. It is an absolutely wonderful prognostic indicator, meaning that long-term she's going to be okay with that she's comprehending English so well. And again, the mom said that she only qualified for early intervention because there's a huge gap between what she can understand and what she can say. So again, because her receptive language is moving along nicely, that would be a really good positive indicator that things will fall into place. That being said, if she were on my caseload, I would still really encourage mom and dad to pick one primary language right now. And I typically recommend that that be the language for school. And so I would do that just to see if that doesn't result in a big increase in vocabulary. And it does say that she's using 20 to 30 words already, but she doesn't use them on a daily basis. So that might mean that she's imitated some of those words and they're not really words that she's saying on her own. I would have mom and dad really pay attention to that. Maybe keep a word log or a word journal and document the words that they hear her say without repeating what she's heard an adult say. And, you know, I call those spontaneous vocabulary lists to parents, meaning that she didn't just repeat it because she heard you say it. She said it completely on her own. And, again, that'll give you a good idea of what words she really knows or what words she's actually able to say on her own. That's not to say that repetition and imitation aren't important, because they are. That's the core skill that a child needs to be able to do to learn how to talk. So we do want her imitating lots of words at this point, but you want to take a step back and see if she's using mostly imitated words or if some of those words really are spontaneous. And that would be my guess. The reason mom says that she doesn't use them every day is that a lot of them are imitated and she's still not hearing much spontaneous language. But again, without talking to this mom, I'm just making a guess. That could be wrong. Next, she goes on to say, I was concerned about the apraxia disorder, but I don't think she has it. And she says, we may spoil her too much, and that may be the problem. Only good parents say that. Only good moms and dads say that. Most of the time, it's usually parents who have been so super responsive to children's needs that they start to feel guilty that they might have gone a little overboard with that, too. Let me just say that that's hardly ever the case. So again, I'm not looking at this little girl and able to go in and meet her family and analyze that, but it's usually not the case. So mark that off your list for feeling guilty. She says she still drinks from a bottle, but she doesn't like to hold it. And my guess is for that, she loves that snuggle time that she gets with you with that bottle. So naturally, why does she want to give that up? She might consider that her only cuddle time. So probably she's a little reluctant to hold the bottle because if she's holding it, you might get up and walk away. You might expect her to do it on her own. So what I would do is still hold her and still cuddle her and snuggle with her and be really close to her, but insist that she hold it on her own. She says she can and will if we ask her to. Oh, but here she says, but she likes to be held and cuddled and for us to hold the bottle. And then mom puts in parentheses, cute, I know. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I love that she wants that connection with you and has such a strong emotional connection. So I would do lots of holding and cuddling and snuggling and just being together when it doesn't involve the bottle. You might have a sippy cup there instead, or a cup with a straw would be even better, and say, you know, you can drink your milk like a big girl now, but mommy will still hold you, but I want you to hold your cup. If you don't need your cup, that's fine. We'll put it down, but I'm still going to hold you for this time because this is our special, you know, mommy, and then say her name time. So that's what I would do, and I would think that some of that bottle need will go away if she still feels like she's going to get her emotional needs met that way. She says she communicates by pointing or grabbing us, and she tries to say stuff, but we don't always understand it. She's very expressive. She shows her emotions. That is awesome. I love it when a child can do that because, again, it's so much better than children who are pretty flat and who don't have any way to express their wants and needs. So that's super that she has compensated for her lack of words and has come up with ways by using facial expressions or body language to let you know what she means. And I think that's great. I think that's super. She says, she's talking about the little girl, she doesn't like surprises. We prep her before going to the doctor, before her first day at Montessori, and she manages fine. When we don't do that, she gets very angry. Her thought process is actually quite complex, I think. For instance, before her second day at Montessori, I told her that she was going to do it again, and she was excited. She went to the fridge to grab the drawing she made in class the first day and removed it from the fridge, went to the door where her school bag was and placed it in the bag. And then she says, all of her artworks are works in progress. So that's great. I love it that she's really planning. She's thinking about things. She's making great associations. So once again, that's an outstanding prognostic indicator that cognitively and from a receptive language standpoint, she has lots going on. She can remember things. She understands what you're saying to her. Again, she can plan her actions by getting that picture and putting it in her bag to say, I'm going to work on this again at school today. That's super. That's wonderful. And that is a pretty complex thought process for a 27-month-old. So I love that. I think that's great information. She goes on to say she is good at following instructions. She's always been the best in her mommy and me classes, even better than the kids older than she is. She says, I feel terrible about her not talking because I know that she must be feeling awkward in class because of it, especially since she understands so much. She is shy, and that probably doesn't help. I don't want her to withdraw even more. What can we do to help her? You know, that shyness thing really is kind of an inborn temperament characteristic, and you're probably not going to be able to do much about that other than just continue to make her comfortable and make her, it doesn't sound like she's reluctant to join in activities where she's familiar, and again, it doesn't sound like she's having really adverse social experiences, meaning that she doesn't want to play, that she's aggressive with other children, that she has extreme separation anxiety, or any of those things where we would consider that shyness to be kind of more than a normal range of temperament. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. Because she is smart on some level, she really might be able to, even at 27 months, internalize some of that, oh my goodness, why can't I talk? But one thing that would make me feel like she's not doing that yet is because she's attempting to talk and she's attempting to communicate. You're not, this mom isn't really saying anything about that she shuts down or that she becomes overly frustrated, and by that I mean by hurting someone else or hurting herself when she's not understood. So again, that you may be assigning some let's see, some actions or some thoughts there that she doesn't really have yet. So many 27-month-old children don't realize that they're not really talking yet enough to make them feel anxious or embarrassed about it. So try to let that go as well. It doesn't seem to me like she's acting on any of that, even if she does kind of realize it. So, again, celebrate that in that she's not having social issues because of that, and then just try not to assign emotions or assign feelings to her that she may not be exhibiting yet. Then she says, do you think we should get your DVD about apraxia and phonological disorders to encourage her to speak? Your other DVD we'll use after she speaks, but we have to take a step back. Is there anything else you would recommend? Thank you so much for your time and thoughts on a wonderful site. Okay, I did get to respond to this mom, and I did apologize for the delay in responding because I do feel so badly about that. And I told her that I didn't answer her before because I really wanted to be able to think about her question and give a more thorough response even than I was able to do in my email to her, and that's the primary reason that I'm using her question here on the show today. The first thing I asked her if she was signing with her, and again, I introduce sign language to almost every child that I see if I feel like they're socially connected, if I feel like that their receptive language is moving along, if I feel like they have communication intent, and it certainly sounds like she does because she's leading her mom and dad. She's using lots of facial expressions and gestures to communicate with her parents, so she certainly has those first two prerequisites for signing and for being able to communicate. She's social and she's using some gestures and things there, so that tells us she has intent. So again, that would lead me to believe that signing would be a really fast and easy way to reduce a lot of that frustration due to late talking, not only for this little girl, but also for her parents. She'll have a way to let them know specifically things she wants. And in the first DVD, Teach Me to Talk, there's a whole section on how to introduce signs to her. So I would definitely revisit that section of the DVD, watch those early sign clips and see the kinds of things and how I'm presenting those toys or presenting those snacks to children, and just copy it. Do the same thing. Do the same activities. Be sure that you're making it really, really playful, really, really fun. Be sure that you're keeping it pretty simple and that you are, again, taking something that she really, really likes and that you're repeatedly giving her an opportunity to sign it. First of all, you're going to tell her what to sign. You're going to show her what to sign by you performing the sign. And then if she doesn't do the sign with her little hands, reach down and help her. And that would be a way to kind of get her going. Snacks usually work best in the beginning with children who like to eat. If she's a bit of a picky eater, you might try a favorite toy that she really likes. Sometimes favorite activities are even more fun. So that if she likes to roughhouse with daddy or be thrown up in the air or swing or any kind of little preferred movement game, you might try that. Start by doing it and then just stop and have her sign something general like more or please, or have her sign something specific like swing. You can do the sign for swing by taking both of your hands and, you know, pushing them back and forth in front of your body, or anything, you know. And really what you're signing doesn't really matter. It's symbolic at this point. And chances are she's not going to use signs for more than a few weeks or months until those words start to come in. So it doesn't really matter how well she does it or even how well you do it. You just want something, some representation of that word, so that she can do it back to you. And if you're not really familiar with what lots of those signs are, again, you can see those on Teach Me to Talk. Or you can look at my website at teachmetotalk.com, and there's a whole section, a whole category for sign language. Click on there, look back for the older articles, because in most of the categories, the best stuff is at the beginning. When I first started the website in 2008, I spent night and day, writing, so that I could get lots of information up on the website and take advantage of that. That's free. That's free therapy, free information for you. So look there. There's one article that has lots of links to other websites that will demonstrate the sign for you. So that the first signs that I recommend or that I teach in therapy sessions are all right there. So click on those links and it'll take you to another site and you'll see a person demonstrate that sign for you. So be sure to use that with her. That's something that I would start today if you haven't already with her, because again, I think it's the number one way to reduce that frustration. Also, those are pretty easy to implement with most children, especially children who don't have cognitive or receptive language concerns, and it doesn't sound like she does. So I think that with the right motivator for her, meaning that you're going to pick something she really likes, and with the right playful attitude and with the right assistance, meaning that if she doesn't do it the first couple of times, you reach out and help her do it. And again, keep it fun, so that she is going to want to do that. And the second she's even sort of signs it, give her exactly what she wants, make a big deal about it. You already said she loves to cuddle and hug her and kiss her and tell her how smart she is and how great she is and how much you love it when she uses her signs or in her words to tell mommy what she wants, and then repeat it and do it over and over and over until she really understands, I have got to do something to get something. And this newfound power with my signs and my words make mommy and daddy really, really happy when I do those things. And in turn, it's going to make her happy because, again, she'll feel more like she's more in control and has more power in her environment. So start the signs today. The other thing I told her is that the apraxia DVD and techniques are much more detailed in facilitating sounds with a very quiet child. I asked mom, how does she try to imitate you with animal sounds and with play sounds when you're using that high-energy, playful approach and really modeling words with her? And so that's something that I would want the parents to really start to do. You know, take out a fun toy with animals, or whether she has stuffed animals, or any, if you're looking at a book with animals or using a puzzle with animals, and really go over the top modeling those silly sounds so that she's going to want to imitate you. You can make the cow, you know, pretend to kiss her and, you know, do moo, moo, and then do, you know, a bunch of kisses. And really see if she'll imitate some of those things. Lots of children imitate many play sounds and many little vocal actions in play with their mouths, or even those non-vocal actions, long before they're able to do words. And for some children, that is a really necessary first step. And so with her, that may be the way that you kind of jumpstart everything, with getting her to really imitate in those really playful, fun interactions. And you've already talked about how connected she is to you and how much she likes to be with you. So I would make those play sessions a regular part of her day. If she's in school in the mornings, I think you said 3 days a week, on the 3 mornings that she's not in school, and since Dad is home with her, I would really have him take 20 or 30 minutes of that time where they're going to do nothing but play. Turn off the phone. Don't look at the computer. Have the television off and do nothing but get down on the floor and play with her. And again, there are super examples in the DVDs. You can see how to do that. If you need more ideas with how to play, I've published a manual called Teach Me to Play With You. It's available on the website there. We're also running a special with free shipping right now, so you can find the Build Your Own Order link on the first page there with that coupon for free shipping. If you need more specific information about any of the DVDs or products that I've mentioned today, and again, not for this mom because I think she's already ordered those, but for any other mom listening, you can get that information on the website. It's in the right-hand column in those colored circles. It'll say Teach Me to Talk the DVD, Teach Me to Talk for the Praxian Phonological DVD, or Teach Me to Listen and Obey, which is the receptive language DVD. And you can click there and read about the DVDs and read the comments that other parents have left. The specific information about my book, Teach Me to Play With You, the therapy manual, is at the top of kind of the left-hand column. You can click on that and get more specific information about the book. But the book is great for parents who need more ideas with how to play, or for parents who have children who aren't as attached as this little girl, or who are harder to reach in play than this little girl seems to be, or for parents who just need more specific ideas or instructions. It's also written from a therapist perspective, so many, many, many therapists, when I go to conferences, those are selling like hotcakes because they are written in a not a list format, but kind of a sequential format in that this is the first goal we would target in this play activity. This is the second goal. This is the third goal. So, again, it's a great resource for professionals, but parents who are committed to learning how to play can use it too. So look at those. Look at those resources to help you learn how to play if you're not the best at that. The other thing that I told her I would do is pick one primary language, and, again, I've already talked about that earlier. So many languages, you know, have completely different sound systems, so for her to try to sort all of that out would be really, really hard to do, especially since she's struggling to talk. And, again, I'm so happy that her receptive language is moving right along, especially in her primary language, which I assume she's in the United States. So I would go with English for a while, because all of the studies tell us that children who are exposed to more than one language do have difficulty meeting those expressive language milestones on time. So that's another thing for you to think about. All right, then I think Mama's written me back one more time. She says, yes, she did. She says, I can't wait to get the Apraxia DVD, so I guess she did order that. And she says, by and by, I read the other day a comment from a mother who said that she and her little boy watched your DVD together, and she said, this is the regular one, meaning Teach Me to Talk. And I tried this with her, my little girl one time, and she was so excited watching you and the kids, and she was trying to imitate the word. She was trying to mimic. She couldn't watch the whole thing at once, but she did watch about 25 minutes of it, which is not bad for 7:30 at night. Actually, I think watching 25 minutes or doing 25 minutes of anything at 27 months is an incredible attention span. So she did great. She says, I'll try to do the same thing with this CD. Watch it with her, or she meant DVD. Watch it with her and with my husband. Thank you so much again. Let me just say that I filmed the DVDs, videoed those for parents. My DVDs are not for children. They are for adults who are committed to working with children with language delays. So for parents, for speech pathologists, for other early intervention professionals. This mom did read on the website right at the beginning, I got a comment, and I might have gotten a couple of other comments from moms who say that their children watch it and like it. Several of the children on my own caseload who were in the DVDs watch it because they're in the movie. I have one sweet family who called it the Miss Laura movie, and my little friend who happened to be in the DVD really liked to watch it because he was in there with me. That being said, the DVDs are really for adults to teach you how to interact with your own child and how to implement those strategies and have those little play sessions at home. If you are going to use the DVD in that way, and again, let me say one more time, that's not how it's meant to be, but if you are going to do it in that way, I would take real advantage of that, in that if she likes a particular section or a particular clip or a particular play routine, try to get a really similar toy or the same toy and try to do the same things that she loves to watch. Why am I saying that? Because she is so much more apt to try to imitate the signs or words or sounds that we're doing in that particular section because it's familiar to her, because she's seen it, because she's liked it. So you would maybe be able to get some more verbal attempts or certainly a sign with her in that context, again, because you've made her excited about it and because it's something that she's liked to watch and she's familiar with it. So that is the only way that I would probably use the DVD with her. And, again, that's not something I would recommend for every child. These adults who watch it, my intention is for the adult to watch it and then be able to implement the strategy with the child. You know, the American Academy of Pediatrics actually recommends no TV for children under 2. And I know she's over 2, and so by that time we would think we could really expose her to limited amounts of television, and she certainly is not a kid struggling with social issues or a kid who would, you know, want to watch 6 or 8 hours a day of TV. So I'm not saying that that's really a deal breaker in this situation, but please, please know that those DVDs are actually intended for parents. But if you are going to use it that way, just try to copy the same play routines so that she would be more apt to want to respond to you. And again, I think you're concerned about her because she doesn't know how to imitate. And you said that she's imitating a little bit on the DVD. So maybe even keep a list of what she tries to say or of what she tries to do to imitate and copy the children's responses or maybe something that I say, and then take that and use it beyond the time with the DVD. Use it in your own play sessions, and that way you've made it really, really functional for her. Don't let those words just be something that she uses, you know, one time only with the DVD, you know, one night last week. Try to do everything you can to recreate that situation so that she's more apt to want to try to repeat those things. But please email me back and let me know how she does. I think that you're going to get pretty good results with this. And I'm so glad that you're starting early intervention. Your own speech pathologist will be able to see things and suggest things that I won't because I'm not able to see her. And no mom can write down every single thing or remember all the details that even might be significant, even if I read them and might give you a different set of advice. So, again, I'm so glad that you have her in her very own therapy sessions so that you can get information really specific to her. Okay, I can't believe I made it through this entire hour by myself. Thank you so much for listening to Teach Me to Talk. I'm Laura Mize, and I hope to have you join me back next week. Thanks. Bye.